Ami, I shall wash tat, that agham, accumulation of sinful reactions, kva, unto whom, aham, I, rajan, O king, tatra, on this fact, vichintyatam, please consider carefully and decide. Mother Ganges speaking, O King, I do not wish to go down to the planet Earth, for there the people in general will bathe in my water to cleanse themselves of the reactions of their sinful deeds. When all these sinful reactions accumulate in me, how shall I become free from them? You must consider this very carefully. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami ma shuchaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can accept the reactions of anyone's sinful deeds and neutralize them because he is pavitra, pure, like the sun, which is never contaminated by any worldly infection. Tijiyasang nadoshaya vahne sarva bhujoyatha. One who is very powerful is not affected by any sinful activity. But here we see that Mother Ganges fears being burdened with the sins of the people in general who would bathe in her waters. This indicates that no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is able to neutralize the reactions of sinful deeds, whether one's own or those of others. Sometimes the spiritual master, after accepting a disciple, must take charge of that disciple's past sinful activities, and being overloaded must sometimes suffer, if not fully, then partially, for the sinful acts of the disciple. Every disciple, therefore, must be very careful not to commit sinful activities after initiation. The poor spiritual master is kind and merciful enough to accept a disciple and partially suffer for that disciple's sinful activities. But Krishna, being merciful to his servant, neutralizes the reactions of sinful deeds for the servant who engages in preaching his glories. Even Mother Ganges feared the sinful reactions of the people in general and was anxious about how she would counteract the burden of these sins. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurinmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atapada Kabalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Karijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. Srila Prabhupada states here, as is stated in Shastra, quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas, that the spiritual master suffers for the sinful reactions, sinful acts of his disciple. That this is factually so, I have heard it challenged by two scholarly godbrothers of mine, who from various perspectives say that, well, actually the spiritual master doesn't accept the sinful reactions of the disciple. One, on the grounds that anyone who chants Hare Krishna is free from sinful reactions. A Krishna Nama Kare Sarva Papa Koi, as is stated in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that by chanting the name of Krishna once, Sarva Papa, all sins are destroyed. The other said that, well, if the spiritual master accepts reactions, then anyway he'd pass them on to his guru and it will go all the way up to Krishna. I'm not sure if that is a good logic, because one offers good things to the spiritual master, not sinful reactions. Here you are. Here's my dakshina, all my sinful reactions. You want more dakshina? All right, I'll go and offer you some more. I'll go and hit a few people on the head with a hatchet, and then you can accept the sinful reactions. Srila Prabhupada often spoke of this. He said that sometimes the spiritual master sees bad dreams as a reaction. And maybe it was Hari Shore, or one devotee wrote about this, how sometimes, of course it's a very intimate statement, but he heard Srila Prabhupada making some sound as if he was having some kind of bad dream. Another consideration is, as Srila Prabhupada writes here, that a powerful, he quotes from Bhagavatam, Tejiya Sangna Doshaya Vahne Sarva Bhujo Yata. This is a quotation from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which states that one who is very powerful is faultless and like fire. Anything which is thrown into fire, the fire consumes it. So the fire is not affected by anything, even some garbage which is thrown into it is burned up. So in the same way, even if there is some apparent fault in a very powerful person, this refers to a spiritually powerful person, they neutralize that by their own power. This is Shukadeva Goswami says that this is in, well, he gives the example of Lord Shiva, who drank poison, a large amount of poison, and he was not affected by that. He can do that. Not everyone can do that. In the same way, Krishna, although he may appear from the worldly point of view to be sinful in engaging in the rasa, by engaging in rasa dance, circular dance with those women who appear to be the wives of others, although they're actually not. Even if it's considered that he might be faulty, it should not. He cannot be faulty because he consumes all sinful reactions. So one who is powerful is not affected by sinful reactions. So then again it may be said, well, the spiritual master is powerful by taking that role. Sakshad haridvena samasta shastraya uktastata bhavyata eva sandhi. By taking the role of the representative of Krishna, becomes as if Krishna. As if Hari. Hari means he who takes away. And takes away what? Well, he takes away various things according to the level of the advancement of the devotee. In the beginning, he takes away the sinful reactions. He takes away the misconceptions. And then later on, he takes away the very mind of the devotee at various levels of advancement. So the spiritual master, as the representative of Hari, is powerful. But, therefore he accepts the sinful reactions, or helps to neutralize them. But we see here that even Ganga Devi herself, who's come to this world for delivering the forefathers of Bhagirath. She came for that purpose, to free them from their sinful reaction. And then she stayed in the world. And in every activity that is orchestrated by Krishna's Leela Shakti, his energy for, or his potency for enacting pastimes. In every action, in every leela, there are various purposes performed. So Ganga came to this world to deliver sinful people, not just the forefathers of Bhagirath. But even she's deputed for that purpose, that she accepts sinful reactions. But on the other hand, she herself is afraid of becoming overburdened with sinful reactions, even though she's so powerful herself, being power, the Sanskrit word in female form, Shaktimati. She's Shaktimati, but she herself realizes that she is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She does not have the power herself to neutralize the sinful reactions. Therefore, she feels afraid of that. Now, interestingly, who she came to deliver, they were burned by the glance of anger of Kapiladeva, who's also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you might think that, well, they should have been delivered by that. Just like when Krishna, he kills demons, they get liberated, right? But in this case, it didn't happen. They had to remain exactly where, maybe in ghostly form, or who, they must have been somewhere, probably floating around in ghostly form for some time. That we may take also as the plan of the Lord. Ganga comes to this earth for various reasons. If we see the path of the Ganga, she flows down from on this earth sphere. She flows down. She comes, of course, from the foot through the coverings of the universe. She comes through the heavenly planets, and then she appears at Gomukh in Himalaya. And then she comes down in more or less a south-southeast course, and then turns to more east-southeast course, and flows more or less east. When she hits the plains at Haridwar, she flows more or less east until she comes to what is now called Malda district in West Bengal, and then takes a sharp turn right, the Ganga. But if you see the water, most of the water continues flowing east. But that water is called Padma. That's another river. It's considered another river. And the Ganga is considered the one which, with less water, until they put the Faraka dam. But anyway, that with less water flows south and goes through what is now called Calcutta, and then down to the Ganga Delta and to the sea. So, Bhagirath, he took a sharp, why the Ganga turns there, he took a sharp turn right, and just so happens that his path took him through Navadvip. So, the Ganga herself wanted to go there. She had another purpose in going there, that by going through Navadvip, then I will be able to serve in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So she had her wish fulfilled. It's worth accepting all the sinful reactions of all the people in the world if you can become a servant or instrumental in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, the spiritual master also, he also may accept the sinful reactions of others in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada wrote in one letter he said, I'm liberal in offering initiation. I may have to suffer so many sinful reactions, but what can I do? I have to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, this may be a complex question, exactly how does this all work? How does it work that one who bathes in the Ganga becomes free from sinful reactions? And sinful reactions, they're in subtle form. They're not all released all at once. There's a big stockpile of sinful reactions, and they don't all get released at once. It may some sinful act that we perform now, it may be in 100 lifetimes that we get the reaction. Or it might be that we get a little now and a little more later, and it's extremely complex. As Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna couldn't work it out at all. It took him practically the whole Bhagavad Gita to understand how the workings of karma. Kim karma kim akarma iti kavyo pyatra mohitaha. Krishna told Arjuna the workings of what is karma, what is akarma. It's very difficult to understand, and even learned persons are bewildered in trying to understand this. So exactly how that works, how does it work that these subtle sinful desires, that they're not actually manifested as reactions yet, well, manifest in our incarceration in the material world, but the full force of them, just like the full force, someone's walking along and something happens, a tree falls over and breaks his leg or something like this. So that's understood to be a specific sinful reaction. That how does that become cleansed or neutralized by touching the water of the Ganga or touching anything sacred? By touching Tulasi, one becomes free from sinful reactions. By touching Gopi Chanda, one becomes free from sinful reactions. That's why it's good to wear Tulsi beads and have Gopi Chanda. One reason, not the best. The best reason is because it's pleasing to Krishna. But even we sing that in Tulasi. Yani kani cha papani brahma hatyadi kani. We sing that, which is the how even the sin of killing a brahmana is neutralized step by step as we circumambulate Tulasi. And then in the song which we sing after that, it's right at the other end of the least reason why one should circumambulate Tulasi. It's not exactly a devotional motive to do so, although devotees chant this to chant the glories of Tulasi. But then during the song we sing the highest reason, the seva abhilasha, the desire to worship Radha and Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan. So how does this all work? It's quite complex. The spiritual master accepts a sinful reaction. Well, how do you accept a sinful reaction? You have to have a body to do that, right? It has to be a body in this material world to accept a sinful reaction. If you don't have a body in this material world, then how are you going to accept it? So those who are wanting to offer dakshina to the spiritual master of sinful reactions, they better do all their sins as fast as they can before he passes away from this world. Because that's meant as a kind of perverted joke, by the way. Not to be taken seriously. Because once he's left this world, then there's no vehicle for, no medium for accepting those sinful reactions. On the other hand, the body of one should never consider the spiritual master material. That's an offense. And the body of a pure devotee, or actually any Vaishnava, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says this, that that's not to be considered material. At the time of initiation, dikha kale bhakta kare atta shamapan she kale krishna tare kare atta sham. At the time of initiation, the devotee surrenders himself, and at that time Krishna accepts him as being on the same platform. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said in this connection, Prabhu kahe Vaishnavaya deha, what is that? Vaishnavaya deha prakrita kabunai. Aprakrita Deho Vaishnav Chidanandamai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the body of a Vaishnava is never to be considered material. It's always spiritual, full of spiritual bliss. He said this to Sanatana Goswami, who was apparently manifesting the symptoms of sinful reaction. Sanatana Goswami had arrived in Puri after passing through the forest Jharikhanda, and due to contact, or touching or drinking some contaminated water, Sanatana Goswami's body was covered with what's that called? Sores, wet sores, what are they called? Weeping sores, yeah. So it's a nasty disease. One is always ritually impure. You can't go on the altar if you have weeping sores. Of course, Sanatana Goswami was also, anyway, banned from entering the Puri temple. So he considered that this was a sinful, Sanatana Goswami considered this as a sinful reaction. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said there's no question of any sinful reaction, because Vaishnava doesn't have any sinful, he's always pure. That also in Chaitanya Bhagavat we find that, what is that? Jato deko Vaishnava bebahara duk nischoja neho taha paranandashuk. That if one sees a Vaishnava apparently unhappy, or in it, one should understand, one shouldn't consider like that. One should consider that he's always full of spiritual bliss in all circumstances. So then where's the question of sinful reactions? Where's the question of sinful reactions for any devotee? Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. A devotee, by Krishna's grace, is freed from sinful reactions. So it's a complex subject. On one hand, you say the spiritual master accepts his sinful reactions. On the other hand, he's beyond all sinful reactions himself. So, maybe understood like this, that it's seen, it's generally accepted by Vaishnava Acharyas that bhakti destroys all sinful reactions except prarabdha karmas. There are various stages. Kuta, bijam, phalonmukha. These are various stages of sin. Kuta means the stockpile of sinful desires, or the which makes the general tendency to act in a sinful way. And then bija, from the stockpile emerge various specific sinful desires. And then phalonmukha, that which is about to fructify. And these are all, there's also categorized. And then reactions, aprarabdha, prarabdha, those that are destined to come, and those that are already going on. So as long as one is within this world, within this body, then the body itself is the material body is a symbol of sinful reaction. It is gained, or it is attained rather, because of sinful reaction. So generally Vaishnava Acharyas, they say that, well, bhakti destroys all sinful reactions except those which are already going on, because we see the body is it's still there, and that one does get, even though one is performing devotional service, one is subjected to heat, cold, hunger, thirst, and so on, and trees falling on your head maybe, or various things like that. Stubbing your toe, the classic example of karmic reaction. So prarabdha, that is not taken. Still one has to suffer this. But the Gaudiya Acharya said that's also As soon as one takes to devotional service, that is also destroyed. But then we see that the Vaishnavas, they suffer apparent sickness, pain, heat, cold, etc. But that is understood that the devotees, they are under the protection of Krishna's internal energy. Mahatma nastu mang partha daiving prakasyamashutaha vajantyananya manaso gyatva bhuta divabhyayam. Those who are ekanta bhaktas, ananya bhaktas, they have no other recourse but Krishna, no other shelter but Krishna. They are fully under the shelter of Krishna's divine potency. So, even though a devotee may appear to be suffering sinful or pious reactions also, at the same time it's understood that it's not exactly Maya giving a reaction, but the internal energy acts as if the, as just like the external energy, but it's in a different way. The external energy acts on the conditioned soul to bind him in the material world, to give sinful reactions and pious reactions also. They're both ultimately sinful. And also to offer more opportunity for creating more pious and sinful reactions, and offering an opportunity for the conditioned soul to indulge in his fantasy of Ishvaro ham aham bhogi siddho ham balavan sukhi. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I am perfect, I am powerful, I am happy. Whereas the internal, this apparent reactions on a pure devotee, it's a different. Maya is acting in a different way, the internal potency, to help the devotee become free from any residual material attachments and come to Krishna. And if the devotee is not fully bhajantyananya manaso, not fully worshipping Krishna, if the devotee is not on that platform, he's not fully under the shelter of the spiritual energy, that means that he may be again subject to the influence of the external energy. So it's quite a complex subject. But the conclusion is, as Srila Prabhupada quotes here, sarva dhamman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami mahashuchaha. We just fully surrender to Krishna, we don't really have to worry. That's the point, that we may analyze all these complexities, but ultimately we have to surrender to Krishna, and then all problems finished. And there isn't any time, so this class is also finished on that note, unless anyone has a question which can be answered in less than 2 minutes, because I don't want to get a sinful reaction for breaking the rule of going over time. Although you can deliver me from my sinful reactions. Yes, please. I can get permission from the GBC to go over time. Yes, to ask the town president. Oh.
Marsh, thank you for your class. Actually, I was just this morning listening to some lectures that His Holiness Bhanu Swami was giving on the...
That was one of the two Christmas devotees who I discussed with on this point, who said that actually the spiritual master doesn't accept the sinful reaction, even though it's clearly stated in Shastra, and Prabhupada states repeatedly in his books. So,
well, he was referring to the characteristics of bhakti that are described right at the beginning.
Klesha Agni, the first symptom.
Yes.
It destroys...
Anyway, well,
suffering.
Since you've had a discussion with him, I won't go into that. But I wanted to ask you specifically, you said, you gave the example of a tree branch falling or something.
Yeah.
Are there specific reactions for specific sinful activities?
Oh yes, there are specific reactions for specific sinful activities. As we find in Manu, he says things like, if you're, well, I don't remember many of them, but I just happen to remember one, that if one who lies will stutter, like that. If you have, if you violate the spiritual master's bed by indulging in sinful reaction with his wife, then one is subject to tuberculosis. Srila Prabhupada also wrote in one of his purports that the Mayavadis, for their sin of being envious of Krishna, they can become a jackal or a stone. It's quite complex. Karmana daiva netrena jantur deho papatya. We get our body under the supervision of the Supreme Lord and the demigods. And it's pretty complex how you get a specific body to live out a set of specific sinful reactions. And then you have to be born in a situation, it's all orchestrated by Maya and the demigods and Krishna, that you come in a certain family because the certain father and mother have a kind of, they have a karmic drama due to them to have this kind of person in their family, and the person who's born there is also destined to have that kind of parents. And then as you go on in the human life, you create more and more reactions which may manifest in that life. And so it's like you have to, the demigods must be constantly adjusting the whole thing. It's very extremely complex. I mean, astrologers can give some, if they're good astrologers, they can give some idea, but you can't tell exactly what's going to happen at any moment. And it may be, one devotee astrologer told me that someone, one of his clients or someone, had died young, and he looked through his chart several times and he just couldn't find anything that indicated that. And he looked at his wife's chart and found that she had widow yoga, that who she married, by marrying them, they will she made him die, so to speak. So, it's another matter that sinful reactions, they can be passed around, as we find in the case of Indra. He gave his sinful reactions to what? The trees, the earth, women, and water. Did I say water? The earth. If just by being with sinful persons, we become affected by that, and we can feel that if we go, just like if we go into we're doing book distribution, we go into a bar, we may be going for the best possible purpose, but at the same time you feel the sinful atmosphere. And Prabhupada said that even devotees, they're preaching, but they may become affected by that. So he said devotees should come once a year to Mayapur, chant and dance and bathe in the Ganga, become refreshed, and go back to the West to preach. Yeah, so more questions.
Some time ago in Vrindavan, one devotee was, scholarly devotee was explaining how Lord Shiva's body is different because it's completely Satchidananda. He was comparing with even like devotees, and I was very disturbed because you quoted also from Chaitanya Charitamrita how this devotee's body is completely spiritual. But then just recently, actually, I just realized that it's there in Nectar Devotion that Lord Shiva has certain qualities. And the qualities of Lord Krishna, it's described how, you know, so many qualities are the living entities up to Lord Brahma, and from Lord Brahma to Lord Shiva. And one of those qualities is that he has a Satchidananda body.
Yeah, yeah.
So can you explain that? Is that Satchitananda different from the Satchitananda body of a pure
Well, when we say this, the body of a pure devotee is fully spiritual, obviously it's not fully spiritual in the... Or it would appear, I'm not going to say obviously, it would appear it's not spiritual in the way that Krishna's body is, because it does appear to be subject to old age and disease, which Krishna's body is not subject to old age. Sometimes for his pastimes he becomes apparently subject to disease. The example given in Shastra is that of iron when placed in fire takes on the quality of fire. It's still distinct from fire, but it, in many ways it is the same as fire, but at the same time it's distinct. Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, from that, if you touch a hot iron, it acts as fire. It's imbibed the quality of fire, that it acts in the same way as fire. But at the same time, there are specific differences. This is bheda-bheda, vishishtadvaita, like that. There's sameness and difference. At the same time, we see that the body of a sannyasi, or a pure, well, specifically of a sannyasi, is buried, not burned, because it's considered to be jnanagdi dagda karmanam. It's already burned in the fire of knowledge, so there's no need to burn the body. It's not a vehicle of sinful reaction. It's worshipable, so it's placed in samadhi. Yeah.
This sometimes works. There's one letter that Prabhupada wrote, very interesting, that one temple president had asked if the temple president would take any sinful reaction. Are you familiar with his letter?
Yeah.
And since he recommended such and such anybody in the temple, and Prabhupada said, why some? Why not all? Now, do you take that as Prabhupada jesting in any way, or because there was never any further explanation?
Well... a bit risky to try to guess the psychology of one spiritual master. It could be taken like this, that temple president should think of it like that. He should feel so responsible, that I'm fully responsible. That why should I want to dump sinful reactions on my spiritual master? There was Pancha Dravida Maharaj gave the example of Yayati when Prabhupada was lying on his bed in Vrindavan in 1977, and Pancha Dravida offered that just like Yayati had taken, he'd offered his youth to Yadu, wasn't it? Then Puru, yeah. Then he said, you take my youth and I'll take your old age. He was offering that. Yeah.
Is this on? Okay. The other comment was that when Rupa Goswami, in the beginning of Vidagda Mala, there's one shloka where introductory, where he said, just as a low-born person may start fire to purify gold, and although the gold itself is pure, although he may be low-born, just a person setting a fire. So he was comparing himself, Rupa Goswami, that in this way the Vidagda Madhava might purify the dirt within the hearts of the devotees. Now, why was he saying like this? Is he knows there's dirt in the heart of the devotees, and what is that dirt? Or is that, I mean, how do you understand it?
How do you understand it? Well, the gradual process of devotional service, it's not overnight or instant. That's why we have the process of sadhana bhakti. Again, we have that bhajantyananya manaso, one who's fully absorbed in service to Krishna is fully purified and fully freed from the influence of this material world. And one who isn't is still subject to be pulled into maya.
So, but even in those days, we know he wasn't writing that for common, not too many people could read Vidagda Madhava. They didn't have Prabhupada translating it or anyone else. You had to be pretty elevated person.
One had to be very elevated to read it, yeah. Well, that's even stated by Jayadeva, I believe, in Gita Govinda. So, so maybe that they foresaw others also reading it, or that reading it, hearing it, a pure devotee may consider that even a moment not in full absorption thinking of Krishna is a contamination. They may think like that. Yeah. There's hands up on this side too, but I guess the mic will gradually get over there.
I get the mic. This is a questionable comment. It's just a little of both. Sometimes when we, this is a concern. Sometimes when we talk about
pious
and sinful, sometimes we're talking, it's, you know, in a general way as devotees, you know, it's like, seems like we're talking in terms of sense gratification, but at other times we seem to be talking in terms of what's favorable for devotional service and what's not favorable to devotional service. How do you distinguish the two?
Contextual terms.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to see the context.
And then the second question is...
Bhaktivinoda Thakur analyzes there are three kinds of punya. One which is... and that's got a lot to do with the motive of the performer. One is punya that is conducive to getting material enjoyment. Another kind is that which is inducive for getting liberation. Another kind which is inducive for bhakti. So just like bathing in the Ganga, or even chanting Hare Krishna for that matter, depending on one's motive, one will get a different kind of result.
Yes, yeah, so sometimes when we're talking, us guys, it sounds to my ear, sometimes we're a little bit too worried about sinful and pious in terms of sense gratification, whereas our real concern, I assume, is really what's favorable for devotional service.
Yeah, we shouldn't be concerned with sense gratification at all, right? We shouldn't be thinking how to get sense gratification. Yeah, all right.
It stated that Agastya Muni had swallowed the whole ocean. And when he was asked to regurgitate it, he said he already digested it. And then it was foretold, in the future the Ganges would come to fill up the whole ocean. But there was no mention of this in the Mahabharata, but in the Bhagavatam. But I know within the Mahabharata it's stated like that. He had actually swallowed the ocean. I don't know, you know, but so I was wondering, there was no mention at all of that.
Well, Bhagavatam doesn't mention everything. Nothing mentions everything. Everything is a big topic. Bhagavatam mostly gives stories in shortened form. Yeah. Put the mic, please give the mic over here. Yeah, Bhagavatam will, most of the narrations in Bhagavatam are given in more elaborately in other Puranas. The essence, the devotional essence is given in Bhagavatam. Another thing to consider is that when Suta Goswami was speaking, he'd already spoken the other Puranas before that anyway.
Who are the personalities who know all of the laws of karma?
Who are the personalities who know all the laws of karma? Krishna.
What about Yamaraj?
Yamaraj, yeah, he should know also.
What about Lord Brahma?
Lord Brahma. Well, they should. They may know as much as Krishna wants them to, or empowers them to. You mean the complexities of how it works?
Well, in one sense, because Yamaraj has to make certain decisions, obviously he would know.
Yeah, but he made a mistake at least once, right?
Right, yeah.
So
this is my question.
It's difficult to understand. It's extremely complex. As much as Krishna wants one to understand, one is empowered to understand.
So are you aware of any statement in the scriptures that speaks about specific personalities knowing, besides Krishna knowing all the laws of karma?
Apart from Krishna, no, I'm not aware of any statement of anyone else knowing to the same extent that Krishna does. But there are certain principles which Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. The complexities are maybe extremely complex. It may not be necessary for us to understand them all either. So Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Hare Krishna. There's a book table out here. On my travels, I'm trying to distribute some of the books that Srila Prabhupada told me to write. I know in Alachua everyone's got lots of books. You can get more if you like. Are you ready already? Are you ready before?